Now, turning to our cover story then of our March 2012 issue, the article is about how to identify the son's lost nursery. The article actually, I think, makes it pretty clear that the son's birth cluster probably broke apart long ago and that all traces of the son's birth nebula are long gone. But the article does point to M67 as possibly being the sun's birth cluster, although it's a bit of a long shot. And M67, of course, is a cluster that you have studied in detail. The article points out that the stars in M67 have a very similar composition to the sun. How close is this similarity, and what is the significance of that close match?
Well, the closeness always depends on how close you can scrutinize it. And at the spectral resolution that was used, it looks like they're very close. That is, that stars in M67 and the sun are very close in their chemical composition and of course, in their age. And, in fact, that's the reason I studied the stars in that cluster, because it seemed to me to be a perfect laboratory for comparison with the sun. Now, if you look even closer, you might find some slight differences, but how important those differences are really depends upon, in a sense, the context of the problem you're investigating. For some issues, any slight differences might not be important, while for other issues, like, let's say, the abundance of lithium, which is an element that's easily destroyed through nuclear reactions in the interior over time, slight differences may be important. So the significance of M67 similarity to the sun really depends upon the kind of astrophysical topic that you're interested in. Now, does that mean the sun was part of M67? Can you assume guilt by association? Well, I'm not so sure about that. It's an interesting argument. I think one would have to explore galactic models given the position of M67 and relative to the galactic plane and the sun's position, whether that's really plausible. But it could be. But there are other stars in the field that are also similar to the sun, and they're not necessarily members of M67. But I think it's a tantalizing possibility that's well worth exploring.
Right. And are there any other clusters that maybe were not mentioned in the article that seems to have, you know, an abundance of stars with similar characteristics to the sun, particularly age?
Well, you know, I'm just not familiar enough with all the clusters in the sky to answer that question. I just don't know offhand. M67 seems to be the closest that we've found so far. There are other clusters more distant with fainter stars that haven't been as investigated quite as closely as M67, and so therefore it's difficult to know whether they may ultimately turn out to be, you know, also close in both the element composition and the age to the sun. But astronomers are looking into that now, both to find solar twins, but also to find, you might say, new cluster candidates for the investigation of or discovery of new solar systems.
Right. And one thing I've always found a little bit interesting and might be a little confusing to some readers is how astronomers can actually date the age of a cluster such as M67. I know you can look at, for example, the HR diagram, the rotation rates of stars, but the article does mention that there's kind of a spread of estimated ages for M67. Maybe you can just briefly summarize some of the methods that astronomers use to date other stars and other clusters.
Well, you know, age dating is a key topic in astronomy, and it's one of the most difficult. And we look at various possible indicators of age. Each one has its advantages, but also its problems. One of the chief ones, of course, with clusters, you already mentioned, and that is to look at the HR diagram to see where the main sequence turnoff is. That is to see where the latest spectral type at which stars are beginning to evolve off the main sequence. And so that main sequence fitting and turnoff fitting is a principal, an important method for age dating of clusters. You also mentioned rotation, and that can be an indicator too, although there can be quite a spread in rotation. Even in young clusters, you can have some sun-like stars that are rotating rather slowly and others that are rotating rapidly. So rotation is an indicator, but again, it's not within a cluster. It may not be the best available one. Then there's other kinematic methods, you know, the motion of the cluster, is it more characteristic of an older population or a younger population? There's also certain elements, like I mentioned lithium earlier. It's depleted in a smooth way, and that could be a good indicator of age. But we found physical processes that can affect that independent of age. They may have to do with rotation of the star and also certain aspects of its interior structure. There's a new method that's emerging, or not so new, but it's a new application, and that's asteroseismology, the counterpart of helioseismology, where we look at essentially the frequency spectrum of vibrations in the star, and we can learn about the structure, and in particular the helium abundance. And that hydrogen-helium ratio can be a very good indicator of the age of an individual star. And that's particularly hard to do, is find ages of individual stars. So we're hoping to refine the methods of asteroseismology, which are very observationally demanding, but are very promising to get direct information of the age of individual stars.
Now, even if M67 is not the sun's birth cluster, and I certainly think that, you know, it's unlikely that it is the birth cluster, obviously it's still a cluster of very intense interest. You described earlier your observations of the magnetic activity of stars in M67. What else about this cluster makes it of interest, especially in terms of learning about the sun's birth environment?
Well, one thing that's interesting, I also had a recent paper on with a colleague, Ansgar Reiners, at Göttingen University in Germany, where we looked at the rotation of some of the stars in M67. And so we had to get some high spectral resolution data, and we measured their projected rotational velocities. And most of them, again, were consistent with being sun-like, but there was a couple that had some relatively high rotation. And so the existence of relatively more rapid rotators in this old cluster is a bit of a conundrum. So, you know, those kinds of dispersions and rotations at old age is of interest to us.
Yeah, and you know, since the topic is of the article was, you know, finding the sun's birth environment, I mean, would you agree it's probably we'll never really know for certain, you know, where the sun was born and what the cluster was like, but at least through these various studies described in the article, we can at least have, you know, a pretty good indication of what the sun's birth environment was like.
Yeah, I think that's right, and I think another factor that may be taken into consideration in studies is, well, the existence of our solar system. Can a solar system like ours form in a cluster environment? And that may be one of the other factors to consider when thinking about and investigating where the sun might have been born or what the conditions were like. Whatever they were like, they would have to allow for the formation of the kind of solar system we have.
Yeah, one thing that's really struck me and the you know, hundreds of other exoplanets, in fact, at the time we speak, the count is now over 700, is how different these other systems are from the solar system. We've, you know, got stars with, you know, six or seven fairly massive planets all packed within, you know, half an AU of their star. I mean, obviously, I think that the birth environment of a star is going to play a pretty important factor in what kind of planetary system you end up with, or as you suggested, whether the star even will have planets at all. Would you agree with that?
Well, yes, I agree that that's something we have to look at closely. And there are multiple stars, binary star systems that do have planets and so forth. So, you know, but can they form the kind of Earth-like planets or terrestrial-sized planets that we know of in our solar system? That's a key question. Yeah, we know a lot of solar systems now. Of course, we're preferentially biased toward solar systems with large planets because they're easier to detect. But hopefully with the Kepler mission, we may be able to find more Earth-like sized planets And we're already approaching that with some of the Kepler discoveries.
Right.
And again, that will just invite further investigation into the conditions that allow the formation of solar systems, particularly ones that have Earth-sized planets.
That answers the questions, Mark, that I had, but was there anything else that you'd like to discuss that I did not ask you about?
No, I think you covered things pretty thoroughly. And so, no, I don't have anything else to suggest.
Okay, great. I think you're doing very, very interesting research, and I want to, you know, wish you continued success, and hopefully we'll hear from you again sometime in the future.
Well, thank you so much, Bob, and all the best to you and the magazine.